The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email us in response to today's program or any other program, just send it to td@kpcg.fm. Later on in the show, in segment two, we'll be running through quite a bit of listener mail that we've been getting, quite a few emails that have come in just in the last few days, so you can look forward to that, as I say, in segment two. When Pope Francis visited the U.S. just 6 weeks ago, you'll remember the American media just lavished nonstop praise and adulation on the so-called vicar of Christ. He could do no wrong. Every move that he made received favorable coverage. And in some ways, of course, you can see why the church that man represents is the most powerful and influential religion on earth. There are 1.2 billion people on earth today that consider themselves to be Catholic. The church has about 400,000 priests serving in an estimated 220,000 parishes worldwide. This is a global religion, a universal religion. This is a religion that has presided over the rise and fall of emperors and kings, of empires and nations. If you think about the world of traditional Christianity, every single denomination that's out there today, in one way or another, traces its lineage back to Roman Catholicism. Every single one. And of course, if you look at the church today in our modern era, you can pick any hot button issue, whether in politics or popular culture or religion, of course. And you can be sure that that massive church and one of its many representatives, if not the Pope himself, will come forward with a very strong opinion or viewpoint. Its worldwide influence is undeniable. And yet, as powerful and influential as that church is and has been, it also has a very dark and oftentimes bloody history. This week, the Vatican has been making all sorts of headlines, not for bringing peace or goodwill to humanity. Headlines instead about internal corruption and scandal. On Monday, the Vatican police arrested a senior Spanish priest and an Italian communications advisor for leaking confidential documents to the press. And this comes at a time when two explosive books are about to hit the market. Two books filled with scandalous tales about thievery and greed and many other acts of corruption happening inside the Vatican, right there at the church headquarters. According to the Associated Press, which has reviewed both of these new books, the leaks contained in the books are seen as part of a bitter internal struggle between the reformers and the old guard. You've heard about this. The infighting, the division, the strife within the Vatican, among the cardinals. The Associated Press says a new book by journalist Gianluigi Nuzzi makes some startling allegations, including a report that Vatican postulators, these are priests who present a plea for the beatification of an individual. These Vatican postulators, officials who promote sainthood causes, bring in hundreds of thousands of euros in donations for their causes, but are subject to no oversight as to how the money is spent. In other words, they welcome in bribes, these postulators. It says in his book, Merchants in the Temple, obtained Tuesday by the Associated Press 2 days ahead of its publication, Newsy estimates that the average price tag for the beatification cause is around 500,000 euros. And some have gone as high as 750,000. Causes of saintly candidates who don't inspire rich donors can languish. They may not be beatified because there's no rich donors behind them. It's like running for political office, this book makes it sound like. He also, this, speaking of this author in the book, Merchants in the Temple, he also recounts a tale involving Giuseppe Sciacca, a top official in the Vatican, who in 2012 apparently wanted a fancier apartment. When Sciacca, his neighbor, was hospitalized for a long period, Newsy writes, the cardinal took advantage, broke down a wall separating their residences, and incorporated an extra room into his apartment, furniture and all. Now you can imagine the response to these allegations, to these books, to these documents that have been released to the press. The Vatican, in a statement on Monday, described these two books as the fruit of a grave betrayal of the trust given by the Pope. And as far as the authors go, of an operation to take advantage of a gravely illicit act of handing over confidential documentation. Publications of this nature, the statement says, do not help in any way to establish clarity and truth, but rather generate confusion and partial and tendentious conclusions. The Vatican's understandably upset by the explosive allegations. And there's so many of them. This from Reuters, a different piece. Vatican financial investigators suspect a department of the Holy See, which oversees real estate and investments, was used in the past for possible money laundering, insider trading, and market manipulation, according to a report seen by Reuters. Later on in the article, it says here, Vatican investigators suspect Natino, this individual that's being investigated, used the APSA accounts for personal trades on the Italian stock market, adding that the balance of more than 2 million euros was moved to Switzerland when the accounts were closed days before the Vatican introduced stricter new laws against money laundering that put money transfers under more scrutiny. So you have all these stories. These are headlines from this week. Money laundering, insider training, trading rather, Swiss bank accounts, shady real estate transactions, stolen documents, internal power struggles, taking bribes for beatifications. That's your news for the week coming out of the Vatican. And how revealing it all is. It shows, doesn't it, just how worldly, how carnal this organization is. Influential as it might be, this is a church of the world. It is the way it is. It has the dark history that it has because it's of this world. It makes me think of what Mr. Armstrong wrote in Mystery of the Ages and The Incredible Human Potential there about Genesis 3. You can look at this later on your own time, verses 22 through 24. When God cut man off from the tree of life and sent him forth from the Garden of Eden. And Mr. Armstrong writes, this is the quote from Incredible Human Potential. He said, when Adam took from the forbidden tree, to put it in the modern language of today, Adam said to God, God, my maker, I reject you as my God. I reject your way of life. I reject your government over me. I elect to continue in the way I choose. I want you to keep your nose out of my affairs. I reject you as the source of basic knowledge. I've taken to myself the determination of the knowledge of what is right and what is wrong. And God replied, I have set clearly before you the way of truth. You have decided. Therefore, I sentence you and the world that shall come from you to 6,000 years of being cut off from me. Go and form your own governments. Form your own religions. Form your own religions. Produce your own knowledge. Cut off from revealed truth. And devise your own system of disseminating such false knowledge. Live according to your own distorted sense of values. But during this 6,000 years, I shall call into my service such as I shall choose for the fulfillment of my purpose. And God has done that. He's called a few out of this world ahead of time to prepare his government for when Jesus Christ will establish that family government on earth in the wonderful world tomorrow, when God's kingdom is set up on this earth. And until that blessed event is upon us, what we'll see, whether we look at government or religion, industry, commerce, business, right down the line, what you see in every direction is of the world. All of these scandals, all of this history, all of this dark history, even with respect to massive churches, it is what it is, because all of this is of the world, and Satan is the god of this world, as 2 Corinthians 4:4 says. And the whole world is deceived, including the world of religion. Now, there's a lot of very sincere, well-meaning individuals in these respective religions and organizations. And even in the true church of God, of course, we're still struggling and battling against sin. Everyone's made mistakes. Everyone has weaknesses and flaws that need to be confronted. But look at the history. If you haven't received your copy yet, make sure you go to thetrumpet.com to get the Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. What a fascinating study this is. This wonderful booklet, brand new, produced just in the last couple of months. And it will open your eyes to the truth. What a study in true church history. It really goes perfectly together with our other booklet on the true history of God's true church, which came out just this year as well, earlier this year. Go and get your copy if we have time in the second segment. We'll look through some of the scriptures that Brad McDonald discusses. I believe it's in chapter 2 of that book, coming out of Revelation 17. Let me switch over to a subject we addressed yesterday, the skyrocketing debt levels in the United States. Governments of this world, and look at what they're producing. Look at what they're bringing upon their own people. This from the Washington Examiner. It says the U.S. national debt jumped $339 billion on Monday, the same day President Obama signed into law legislation suspending the debt ceiling. So the ceiling's been there. We hit the ceiling months ago, and then the debt mysteriously stops going up as those involved, those playing with the books, use all kinds of tricks, all kinds of smoke and mirrors to supposedly keep the debt where it is. And then as soon as that ceiling is finally lifted, then bam, you have $339 billion that are immediately, says that legislation allowed the government to borrow as much as it wants above the $18.1 trillion debt ceiling that had been in place. It can just go on a spending spree now, right through next year, right through to the end of President Obama's second term. It says the website that reports the exact tally of the debt said the U.S. government owed $18.153 trillion last Friday and said that that number surged to $18.492 trillion on Monday over the weekend. That's an addition of $339 billion for all of the Christmas presents, as the president called it yesterday. He couldn't imagine a greater Christmas gift for the American people than something like this, upping the debt ceiling to where there's no limit, to where you can just keep spending and spending and spending. It says, this is from the Washington Examiner, the increase reflects an increasingly common pattern that can be seen in the total U.S. debt level when the debt ceiling is reached. It just happens over and over again. We bump our heads on the financial ceiling, and then Democrats and Republicans alike come together to legislate more credit cards with no limits. And then it's bragged about after the fact, as if it's manageable, as if it makes sense, as if it's sound. One listener who heard the program yesterday, he said, "I just thought I'd tell you that I'm 68 years old and I've never been in debt. My father hated debt and passed that attitude on to me." That's what God's church is going to have to do in the wonderful world tomorrow, pass that same attitude on to all of mankind. It really does get down to education, as I discussed briefly at the end of yesterday's program. Until that God family government is set up and established, though, we can expect more of the same. This too, I mean, what a lesson from history if we open our Bibles and look in. Think about ancient Israel, how discontented they were, demanding of the prophet Samuel a king, just like the other nations around them. They wanted to be like the world. Israel wanted to be like the world around them. And so they went to the prophet Samuel, God's servant, who represented God's perspective, who was a preacher of God's truth. They rejected it. Not unlike what Adam and Eve did in the Garden of Eden. And God said, "All right, go your own way." And he told Samuel, you go and protest solemnly to these Israelites and tell them what they're getting into. And so Samuel went back and told them the manner in which their king would rule. You want a worldly ruler like the other nations around you? Here's how it's going to be. He's going to recruit your most talented young people for his own vain purposes, to fill positions in his ever-expanding bureaucracy. He'll draft the most able-bodied young men for the army to be his instruments of war. He'll slap on all kinds of property taxes to everything you own, taking the very best of the fields and the vineyards for himself, for his ever-expanding government. He'll introduce all kinds of burdensome taxes and then use the proceeds selfishly. That's the way it will be. If you want a leader, if you want a king, like all the other nations around you, if that's what you choose, you can have it. Go ahead. But then coming along with it will be all the curses of human nature, of living apart from God's law, all the curses associated together with sin, the ways of sin, the ways of selfishness. You can be like all the other nations. You can be like all the other religions. That's what the nation of God chose. That's what ancient Israel chose. Now, as Mr. Armstrong teaches in Mystery of the Ages and others of his writings, the people of Israel, they didn't have God's Holy Spirit. Samuel did, and the prophets did. Those men were to be part of the foundation of God's true church. But ancient Israel didn't have the heart to obey. They didn't have God's Holy Spirit. And yet they had righteous leadership. They had a lot of advantages in terms of heredity, environment. But even in those good circumstances, they still rejected God and His authority. They rejected God's lead. They rejected Samuel's protest. This is the world we live in, a world cut off from God, a world that's gone out from the Garden of Eden to form its own governments, its own religions, its own fund of knowledge, its own system of disseminating that knowledge, so much of it false, its own way of life, living according to a distorted sense of values. Here again, you see the desperate need for true education. True education based upon the revealed truth of God. True values. You look at the world today and you see just how much it needs God's truth, the return of Christ, the family of God. This next piece, President Obama's Ban the Box executive order. It says from International Business Times, looking for work may soon get easier for the tens of millions of Americans with criminal records. President Obama is expected to unveil an executive order Monday that would prohibit federal agencies from asking prospective hires about criminal backgrounds until later in the application process. And I think that did go through on Monday, where the box is going to be removed from all those federal agencies looking into prospective hires. It'll be removed at least in every federal agency, one would assume, except for those seeking employment in the President's Secret Service. Obviously there, you would want to know if someone had a criminal background. But that's being removed right across the board, and there's a push right across the United States to remove it from all applications. Ban the box, as they say. And the reason is because of the disproportionate numbers. Coming back to the race thing, it says ban the box proponents argue that criminal background inquiries unfairly bar otherwise qualified applicants from finding work. Nearly 1 in 3 Americans have criminal records that show up on background checks, and people of color, who make up about 30% of the general population, but 60% of those in prison, are disproportionately affected. So in order to make things fair, so the thinking goes, even if it means hiding the truth from American employers, even if it means endangering, perhaps, the lives and the property of average Americans, we've got to ban the box. We've got to ban the box. All in the name of fairness. And really, it's not fair at all. It's certainly not fair to those who are hiring people. This next piece from the Telegraph, just to broaden our look a little bit, Libya. This was something that I saw just two days ago. A pretty amazing story. A threat. a threat coming from Libya that it would flood Europe with migrants if it doesn't get its way, if it doesn't get some favorable response from the EU. Libya has issued a veiled threat to send hundreds of thousands of extra migrants to Europe if Brussels does not give official recognition to its self-declared government. You either back us or we'll flood you with refugees. It says the Congress took control of Tripoli last year, and of course you know how much that nation's been in turmoil ever since the West went in there to fix it. It says after fighting against forces loyal to the internationally recognized House of Representatives government and is not recognized by the European Union as Libya's legitimate government, then it quotes this representative from this government that the EU considers illegitimate. And he says, to be honest, I've advised my government many times already that we should hire boats and send them to Europe. We are protecting the gates of Europe, yet Europe does not recognize us and does not want to recognize us. So why should we stop the migrants? Send more over. It's a problem that won't go away, this refugee crisis. This was an interesting piece from The Telegraph just yesterday. Britain will pay dearly for its retreat from the global stage. It talks some about the recent meetings Britain has had with China. Richard Palmer also wrote about this at thetrumpet.com. But the article says here, a little over 5 years ago, shortly after David Cameron became prime minister, his then foreign secretary, William Hague, gave a much trailed speech setting out a modernized vision for UK foreign policy in a networked world. He promised a foreign policy that both nurtured Britain's historical relationship with the U.S., but also adapted to meet the challenges of a world that was being disrupted by terrorist technology and a tectonic shift eastwards in the global economy. Above all, Mr. Hague promised our approach to this newly complex global environment, on which he correctly asserted Britain's future depended, would be clear, focused, and effective. It has, of course, been anything but. And then notice this. It says, 5 years on, Britain finds itself self-marginalized in Europe, absent in Syria, Libya, and Ukraine, and increasingly estranged from or in Washington as George Osborne turned what should have been a carefully calibrated courtship of Beijing into a diplomatic equivalent of a teenage lunge. As I say, Mr. Palmer wrote about this. Britain reaching out to China because it's desperate, because it's losing influence everywhere else in the world, because its relationship with the U.S. is in tatters. Continuing from The Telegraph, it says, during that period, with Mr. Cameron buffeted by events abroad and isolationist instincts at home, it has at times been difficult to discern any strategic direction to British foreign policy. And then skipping ahead here to the conclusion, it says the incoherence of Mr. Cameron's foreign policy has by turns both baffled and concerned the international community. But one largely hidden casualty of the chaos has been the Foreign Office, whose budgets have been cut by a fifth since 2008 and now are facing cuts of a further 25 to 40%. The news this week that Britain now spends less on diplomacy per head than New Zealand and 50% less than Germany should ring alarm bells. It should. It certainly should. Britain will pay dearly for its retreat. And you could add to that that the United States will pay dearly for its retreat as well, for its pulling back off of the world stage. And instead focusing in on all these internal policies that are just, as we've been covering, costing so much money, raising the debt in ways that should, as this article said, that should ring alarm bells. One last story here, not to end on a negative note, but it's a pretty sad story about those who are over 50. And this divorce revolution in the United States. It talks about how that, on the whole, America still leads the world in divorce. It has statistics that are the highest anywhere, but that those stats have fallen to some extent since their peak in 1979 with every demographic, with every age group, except for those, sadly, over 50. It says divorce rates among over 50s have doubled since 1990. Doubled. Just since 1990. Most people who divorce after the age of 50 have already been through one marriage breakup. It quotes one professor as saying, second marriages tend to be shorter than first marriages. People feel less invested in them, and the probability of a mismatch between spouses is relatively high. It says, finally, advances in medicine and lifespans. Well, it goes through and gives some of its conclusions or speculations on why the trend is the way it is. But to just summarize the breakdown, it says 25% of Americans who get divorced are age 50 or over. 25%. 59% of people who divorce after 50 also divorced before they were 50. So a lot of them, as it says, are getting divorces for the second time. And then it says finally 66% of people who only divorce after 50 are male. So yet another sad trend that shows how complete the breakdown of the family has been in the United States, in Great Britain, in these nations that have descended from ancient Israel, these nations that have gone their own way, that have formed their own societies, their own systems of education, of government, of religion. It's why the world is the way it is today. It's important that we step back and we get this perspective and that we understand exactly what it means when the Bible says the world's deceived. When Jesus said that many will come preaching, I am Christ, and they'll deceive people with religion. The first horse of the apocalypse, after all, is religious deception. Well, there's a lot of passages we could rattle off and get into, but we'll just break it with that. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream's available at kpcg.fm. Send us your email to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
And welcome back. I'll see if my voice can hold up to the end of a few of these letters. I think I'll just conclude with this and end the program a little bit earlier. The first segment went longer than I expected anyway, but as you'll see from these emails, some of these have come in as letters, but they come from all over the world. People that have written in telling me about how they listen to the program, where they listen from. This first one listening in from Mumbai, India, through SoundCloud. The next one comes from Florida. Each day at lunch is when this listener tunes in. He says it's informative, uplifting, to be able to sit here at my shop, hear the truth that matters, to hear it explained, he says. Keep up the great work you and all your staff are doing. That's from Florida. This next one's from Suriname, South America. Just bouncing around all over the world. Hello, TD family. I'm grateful for the technology to be able to stream the content on kpcg.fm as much as possible from Suriname, South America. I'm a loyal recipient of the work you're doing in Edstone, supporting the Prophesy Again Commission. Thanks for all the effort you guys make in producing these programs with regards to the MOA goal. I've been thinking about Mr. Armstrong, his passion for reaching the largest audience possible. And then he concluded by saying he needs to develop that strong desire that Mr. Armstrong had and that Hannah had. Hannah of the Bible, her passion for children, for family. This next one from a man in Kansas. I listen to the Trumpet Daily on my smartphone via TuneIn Live or the TuneIn app for smartphones. It says, when I need to listen to something I've missed live, I listen to the SoundCloud app on my smartphone. Such a breath of fresh air, considering the current abandonment of truth by the establishment media, free of political spin. You provide usable understanding, i.e. real news. Your perspective is global in content, recognizing history and prophecy, providing clarity without political spin. So profound. That's from Kansas. This next one comes from Oregon. We've gotten several here of late from the state of Oregon. They're in the great northwest of the United States. He writes, from the Trumpet Daily Show to the latest Key of David and all the other programs, I can easily see God inspiring some great messages. I'm so honored to be part of this work. These are the most informed newscasters alive today. Over 100 requests for which day is the Christian Sabbath plus all the other requests. That really means a lot. I pray God will call as many as he sees fit and grow the church. He writes that he hopes to be baptized within the next month. It's an exciting time for him in his life. He talks later about just enjoying the program that we put together last Friday about the impact that radio had on God's work and how Mr. Armstrong used that medium. He says, love the Key of David this week. This is the one that my father put together. I think this was from last week. But what a beautiful prophecy fulfilled how Mr. Armstrong prayed for the rain to stop for 3.5 years. And then finally, he says, loved also the response you got from prison yesterday. God, too, started teaching me his truth through the church literature while in prison almost 7 years ago now. So here's an individual who received the truth in prison, who's now out on his way to baptism. He says, so I know what this life-saving knowledge can do for a person in a situation like that, and any person, anywhere for that matter. That, again, was from Portland, Oregon. This next one, it says, yes, we're listening to you. We're listening to your father on the Key of David. The TD programs from way down under here in New Zealand, receiving it loud and clear. What an incredible medium the church has put to use. Thank you for keeping us well informed of conditions, especially in Europe and the Middle East, at this time. Certainly, it is almost unbelievable the numbers of refugees that are flooding out of the East, westward into Europe. Obviously, something has to give. We're watching, and we're waiting. We're right behind you. That's from New Zealand. And then finally, this last one comes from another one from Florida here. It says, just wanted to send a note of appreciation for the daily broadcasting. I usually stream at the office on my PC while my wife streams at home on her phone as we work. It says, through these shows, we feel we're more connected with the work as well as fed by the truth. Keep up the good work. That one comes from Florida. So you can see from that sampling that we get good response coming in from all around the world, from many different continents even, many different nations. The bulk of our audience, no doubt coming from the United States and Canada and Australia and the Philippines and here in the UK. But we certainly appreciate everyone's support and encouragement. And we encourage you to continue with that communication. Send us your thoughts. Tell us where you're listening from. Tell us what device you're using, the device of choice when it comes to listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show or any of the other programs on this station. This is Wednesday, by the way, and coming up next at the top of the hour, you have Joel Hilliker's program, The Trumpet Hour. So after a short break, make sure you come back for that around about 8:05 there in Oklahoma, Oklahoma time. And of course, those programs like this one will be posted at thetrumpet.com. You can also get the posting at kpcg.fm if you're unable to hear it live or to hear it through the live stream. There certainly are many ways, as you've heard even from these letters, that you can get the program as a podcast. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is at kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. See you again tomorrow.